hurricane season. I went to Utah. Utah gets less than 10 inches of rain. A lot of the areas of Utah I worked in had less than 6 inches of rain a year. What do they rely on for water? Snowpack, right? So I got to work in cropping systems in Utah. What does Utah grow? I get that question. They grow forages. They're big forage production, alfalfa, grasses, silage corn, wheat, barley, down the plethora of crops. Worked in irrigation management and cropping management and how they interact with each other. At the same time, COVID happened. I know the world ended. It did not end in Utah. We continued working. We had field work to do. But we got a grant to do another project. We couldn't hire another student. My advisor comes to me and goes, can you grow industrial hemp? I said, I come from a tobacco background. Of course I can grow industrial hemp. So part of my PhD was in industrial hemp. Please don't hold that against me. It was the right time, right place. I ran 60 acres of this other project and grew hemp. It was a great time. Finished my PhD April 24, started here in June of 24. And oh boy, did things just kind of get on the right on one start of we have problems. I did not bring the problems. They're just coming to me going, can you find solutions? So the crime, the problem, sometimes we see our brome fields suddenly turn brown. We've cut them in June or July, and here comes late July and August, and then they suddenly turn brown, and it's not drought. If we think about sorghum, I'm not saying we're sorghum, it's up to you. I'm good on lights, whatever. Everyone go to sleep now. Okay. For the sorghum plant, we would see what would be referred to as a bullet hole effect. So some of the leaves are going to look a little tattered, or there's just straight up holes directly through those leaves. Why? Well, the criminal, which is the fall army worm, we're going to hate this little creature by the end of this presentation. The fall army worm is not a very good acrobat, so when it crawls up a sorghum leaf, it kind of eats right directly through and falls to the ground. They're not very effective at eating sorghum, but they're really effective at eating our forages. So I'm bringing up the pictures of them. Why? Female and male moths. If you tell me you have a moth in your field, okay. I'm gonna ask you maybe what color it is, but it's not my main concern. The female can lay up to 1,000 eggs. That should be your concern of why we care about the female moth. She's not doing any of the eating damage. Who's doing the eating damage is her nasty, nasty little children. We're going to refer to them as worms. They are technically caterpillars. They are larvae. But everyone calls me and goes, hey, I got worms in my field. I know what you're talking about. It's not the cute little earthworms. It's these nasty creatures. The color of them matter. But you might not be like, well, I can't quite tell what color they are. You know it's a fall army worm based off the inverted Y on their forehead. Okay? Even the small, small ones are going to have that Y on their forehead. If you get nothing else out of this presentation, Y on forehead means bad. Okay. I bring up identification because we may have more than one worm in a field or in different crops. Some of our caterpillars are very crop specific. Others have a wide range of hosts or things that they're going to eat. Some of them overwinter in Kansas, meaning we never get rid of them, where others we get rid of them. Fall armyworm is one of those. That it does not like our winters, even if this year's wasn't that harsh, okay? So if you call me and say, I have a moth flying around and somehow got in my house, I have fall armyworms, I'm gonna say, nope, it's March. You don't have fall armyworms. You might have one, something else on this list that has overwintered, like a true armyworm. They are not, again, same. They're not the same worm, different controls, different number that we'd be concerned with in specific crops, okay? Also kind of some, they say they're lookalikes, they're really not lookalikes when you really start looking at these larvae. These are not fall armyworms, okay? This is a green clover worm. The green clover worm really likes, it says clover, it likes alfalfa and it likes soybeans. So maybe you have a different crop or your neighbor has a crop and they're full of worms and you think, oh no, they've got fall armyworms. If we look at their color, it's probably not a fall armyworm. And the same applies to our yellow striped and then our soybean pod worm. I got calls last year that soybeans were eaten up by fall armyworms. The damage did not make sense because a pod worm eats, as the name says, directly through a pod. Fall armyworms do not do that, okay? So we may be sitting in the room. I know I'm the youngin' in the room, okay? You may be thinking, well, we didn't used to have fall armyworms. They weren't a problem. Realistically, they probably were not a problem. According to a 2006 study, the fall armyworms typically come out of Texas. They'd maybe fly to Oklahoma, but they really weren't going further north. Okay? They really were not an us problem. 2021, a study followed up on what happened in 2021. I wasn't here yet, but I heard 2021 might have been an apocalypse year of fall armyworms. We are finding fall armyworms go all the way north into Canada now. What is driving this change? Might have taken that slide out. Weather patterns. So the warmer it stays down south in Texas, the more we can grow populations of them that follow with the wind. What do they grow in Texas year round, especially southern Texas? Corn, continuous corn. The fall armyworm moth, not saying that's her favorite crop, but she does very well in it. So if every moth lays up to 1,000 eggs, they're growing continuous corn, they have the right temperatures, we're just building up populations. Back a few, a couple a decade or so ago, we had referred to in corn populations as BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, right? It was a bacteria that was put into corns that when a fall armyworm or another worm ate the corn, it would kill it. Well, bad news. Fall armyworms, like many other insects, have evolved against it. BT does not kill them really anymore. So we've lost the effectiveness of BT that's been across many acres, and we've just bloomed up populations of fall armyworms, the moths. So they are not naturally here in Kansas until we get the right weather conditions, summertime, that they blow up from the south. Okay? We might get populations that hang out in Oklahoma, they grow the populations and then continue heading north. It's the moths that are flying. It is not the caterpillars making that long of a march. Okay? So every year is going to be different. Okay? 2024, we did not get fall armyworms heavily until September. Last year, they showed up the last week of July. What caused that difference? Weather patterns? Was it more relatively wet at times last year? Was it just more we just had the correct wind pattern to blow them up? We're still trying to figure out why. 2021 was as bad as it was. Then 22 was a little quiet, 23 was kind of quiet, 24, not apocalyptic levels, but bad, and then last year was really bad. We're going to think a little bit about if they're showing up. We're going to go based off of last year, okay? They showed up in late July, early August. Their optimum development and reproductive temperature range is 78 to 86 degrees. You're sitting here thinking, it's hotter than that in July and August. Daytime temperatures, yes. What are our nighttime temperatures? They're in the correct range. That's why for some phone calls I was probably getting was the, my field looked fine yesterday, by 2 days later, it's gone. They're probably doing their damage at night because they are not daytime sensitive. They eat when the temperature's correct. For a minimum for the egg and larval growth is 55 degrees. So they can handle some cool temperatures, but a killing hard freeze gets rid of them. Think about the last two falls we've had. They've been pretty long falls. So we don't get rid of them very quickly. We do get them even like a mild winter right now, but we can have them for quite a long period of time. Larva development declines above 90 degrees. That does not mean it stops. And same with eggs stop hatching above 100 degrees. That does not mean it kills them. They just don't hatch until they get back into the correct temperatures. So they are hardy little insects. A little bit about those egg masses. I want to bring your attention to this gentleman's thumb in a single egg mass on this leaf. You are not able to see where these egg masses are, okay? You're not gonna be able to see them in your field and just, you can't do that. You're not gonna be able to find them because they could technically be on a tree leaf. They could be in a ditch side. They could be anywhere that moth decided to land and lay her eggs, okay? Each female lays up to about 1,000 eggs, with each mass of eggs being 50 to a couple hundred eggs. So we can grow populations very quickly. Those larvae will hatch and eat for 14 days. The last 4 days is when they're doing their most damage. It's also the hardest to control them with an insecticide in those last 4 days because they're too big. The larva will dig into the soil to pupate. That is the only time the fall armyworms are actually in the soil. I've gotten the phone call, well, the fall armyworms are coming out of the soil and eating the roots. That's not how a fall armyworm works. You might see them what looks like they're coming out of the ground, because when they first hatch, they are itty bitty tiny little, look like black slivers of wiggling. So it looks like they could be coming out of the soil. They are not, okay? So basically their lifespan is a 4 week trot, 4 weeks. 2 weeks as a worm, and then they pupate for 2 weeks, say, and then the moth comes out, and the moth has about 24 hours to live. And all the only thing she is doing is laying eggs. The male is just happy to be out and is looking for the female. They're not really doing anything else other than just making babies. So with that said, we can have many overlapping generations. Once they get here, we start building populations, and they can still keep coming up from the south. Okay? It makes controlling them harder. So how many is too many? This is from, again, our forage perspective. They can get into corn, but they're not doing enough damage typically to corn to count that you need to do an insecticide to them. They can damage sorghum, but typically our sorghum, they're going to leave it alone, or it's not going to be enough damage to really count for an insecticide. Forages is the exception. So if it's alfalfa, 1 to 2 caterpillars per square foot can kill seedling alfalfa. They'll wipe it out. And what alfalfa price seed prices right now, that's scary. If it is a foot tall plant, it's going to take that number up to 10 to 15. But if we're thinking again about those populations, how many can hatch per group of eggs, we can hit those numbers very quickly. For brome or pasture, this is also going to be for our tall fescue, any of those more tame forages, and sadly, even our native tall grass prairie forages, we'd say treat at 4 to 5 worms per square foot. Okay, it doesn't take many for them to really take out a stand. And then for wheat, this will be for wheat, for trit, for barley, you might not want to protect your cover crop, but they will go after your cover crop. If you see 25 to 30% of the field suddenly disappearing, go look, because it only takes 2 to 3 for an actual treatment to take care of them. So you see, they can have high populations, and it doesn't take many for them to cause a good amount of destruction. Okay? Again, they feed for 14 days. When we see this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that is referring to their instars, or their basically the size of them. That's not in inches. That's just more how we designate insect stages of life, okay? They don't look any different. It's just they're itty-bitty to they're kind of big and really nasty, and they're really easy to find when they're big and nasty. And if you're full of the big, nasty ones, your insecticide is not going to affect them as well. So sweep, count, and look at the size of them before we do any application. Just because you see your neighbor spraying does not mean you need to spray. I want you to get into your field. Can I only do the perimeter of my field? No. Because what if the fall armyworm moth flew in and went directly into the middle of the field? There was no protection there, and you haven't looked there, right? And then they can just march out. A moth can lay her eggs in a ditch side, like a grassed waterway, and then they march out. An army worm is like its name, and it marches. How far do they march? I am not saying they travel for miles, but they can take out a 500-acre field pretty quick at high populations. So damage signs. So here's our brome field suddenly turning brown, and we can kind of see this distinct pattern of where they were marching. This was not a field that turned, the whole thing turned brown. I have seen fields where the whole thing turned brown. It was just a really heavy infestation, right? And then we refer to in wheat, This is called window painting. So if you start looking at leaves and there's a section that's been eaten out, that is a sign of fall army worms. I've gotten the question of, I talked a little bit about insecticides, your handout's about insecticides. What if I don't want to apply an insecticide? They cost money, they're not environmental friendly. Go down the list of why you're against insecticides. We have some parasitic wasps. That's what's on this little nasty fall armyworm, those three little white dots. That is the parasitic wasp's babies. I cannot tell you at all if we have enough parasitic wasps to take care of the populations that we grow to. So we cannot really rely on insect-on-insect situations to clear them up. Birds, toads, skunks, and domestic fowl will clean up a field. Had a gentleman tell me yesterday, well, my 10 peacocks did a really good job keeping the fall armyworms out. And I said, it sounds like you have a side hustle now of renting out your 10 peacocks. There's been studies out of wildlife showing that turkeys can fill up their entire gullets, basically, on fall armyworm diets, and they're happy until they got shot or hit by a car. Having birds in your field, is that a sign of fall armyworms? Potentially. I'm not going to tell you to go run after every bird in your field or try to attract the birds. This is more of, this isn't your solution either, is waiting on the natural predators to take care of them again. Think about those high numbers. I got lots of phone calls last year of, hey, I Googled that I can put soap on my field and it'll take care of the fall armyworms. We're gonna take a quick path down memory lane about anything with herbicides for a second. Soap plus sunlight on leaves is a disaster, okay? It's basically promoting sunburn to leaves, so you're killing your plants. Also, when we think about herbicides, we tend to put a sticker in it or some kind of surfactant. Surfactant and soaps are cousins. So please do not apply soap to your field thinking you're gonna kill the fall armyworm. You're probably gonna kill your grass. Please leave the Dawn dish soap for the duckies, okay? As the handout that Lindsay gave you, there is this wonderful, wonderful chart that the entomologist put together of your varying products by mode of action and by crop. If you see your favorite product up here and it's for some reason not under the forage section, I'm not going to point out which product it is because I keep getting yelled at about it. There's a product that many people spray over brome that's not listed in that category, okay? Here is the caveat. I have argued with the entomologist. The entomologist and I keep going back and forth. The product label says army worms. He cannot tell if that means true army worms or fall army worms because they're not the same species. Okay? Entomologists sometimes get lost in the weeds. If someone suggests a product that's clearly labeled for other things for control of fall army worms and you use it, I'm none the wiser, okay, because I know it also works. We got the phone calls last year of, my product didn't work. We have resistance. I don't think we had resistance, okay? We had this kind of a problem. Here is my hand. We were picking the nasty little creatures out of a square foot section, and you can see that there's some size differences, right? Here's a small one, here's a bit bigger of one, and then there's this really nasty big one. When we use products too late into these big nasty ones, anything over an inch and a half, the product isn't gonna hit them. Their bodies are just, I don't wanna say immune, but it just doesn't work effectively against them when they're that big because they're also about to pupate and they don't care. Insect biology is weird. So that's where I'm saying, look at your field, scout, see what size you are, because I'm assuming just because you have some in this bigger size doesn't mean there's a bunch of other little ones, okay? So just being mindful, and if we have escapes, it's not that the product didn't work, they were just a little too big. Let's think about some price breakdown. These were last year's numbers, so please don't shoot the messenger if these numbers have changed. I don't sell product, right? So generic insecticides last year were running $3 to $4 per acre. Those application costs were $8 to $12 per acre. So a 50-acre field was costing about $550 to $800 per treatment. I say per treatment because we were getting told people were spraying once, twice, and three times to protect their brome or their native or their grass, okay? What is it gonna cost to replant that brome? Seed $60 per acre, and that's the $3 per pound and a 20 pounds per acre. Yes, that is the high rate for planting brome. I feel much more comfortable at the high rate of planting brome to try to get it established. Planting costs $22. That's based off of old diesel prices. Who knows where we're going to be at soon. So a 50-acre field is going to cost you nearly $4,500 just to replant. I'm not an ag economist. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to kind of give you a little bit of math and what the situation is. Okay? There is sometimes hope. This was a field I went and looked at in 24. This was September of 24, so we continued to get damage in this field. We can see that there was some life, but again, this was hit pretty hard. We came back in April of last year, and it was back. The brome was back. I can't say that's for every field I have seen this year. I went down to southeast Kansas to look at five fields that got hit. Four of the five are gone. I went and looked at 13 fields last week. They're all in varying levels of conditions. This is not brome coming back in this field. That's tall fescue. This brome field was not recovering as fast as I would have hoped. Okay? So some fields are going to be different. And why? What determines a stand coming back? Bad news, I don't know. Okay? And that's not because I am completely ignorant or I've not been here long enough. Forages have been ignored by research for a while by researchers because there's no money in doing it. Okay? Companies don't care to do research in forages because there's no money in it. And sadly, that's what drives innovation, right? Is money. So we haven't been looking at fall armyworms and forages until now, because we continuously have an issue. It took until that apocalypse year of 2021 and then last year for me to get one of the entomologists to agree that perennial grasses need to be sprayed with an insecticide. He kept telling everyone, your grass will be fine, it's a perennial, it will come back. That has not been the case. So what factors should we consider if a stand will or will not come back? And please take this as a non-exhaustive list. Every field is going to be a little different because I went and seen 13 fields. Of those fields, a lot of them were managed by the same farm managers. They were all acting different, even though they gave me their cutting times, their fertility, like all that information. So factors to consider, when did you cut it? I got told that back in 2021, anyone who cut their hay, and this was in the southeast, so Osage, Anderson County area. They were told me if someone cut before July 9th, their stand was okay. If they happened to cut after July 9th, it was gone. Okay, that was 2021. That was a very specific year. Cutting back to last year, I haven't pieced that puzzle together because I have seen stands all over the place when it comes to cutting date. Okay, I know it was also a wet year last year, so that did delay things. Cutting height. I'm not here to sell you on any kind of equipment or tell you you're doing anything wrong. All I'm going to say is, if we're cutting too low, because we're trying to get as much forage as we can, we're taking away all the fun solar panels off of that grass. If it's a cool season like brome, if we cut too late because of weather conditions, maybe we're cutting into July. Brome really doesn't like it when it gets hot. And by hot, I mean above 80 degrees. She is a cool season grass. She wishes for the Mediterranean life, okay? So if we cut cool season brome late, we've cut her too low so she doesn't have a whole lot of solar panels left, she's gonna have to try to use whatever reserves she has in her root system, and she's not gonna be happy doing that because it takes energy to convert carbohydrates back to usable sugars to force leaf material out when it's not the right temperature, Okay. Well, then guess what we just introduced at the same time? Fall armyworms. We didn't introduce them. Please, please don't take it that way. They show up, right? So we are kind of giving brome a disadvantage. If we compare that to our native tall grass prairie, it is a warm season forage. It takes longer in the spring for it to wake up, right? Cool season's waking up right now. Tall grass prairie is still just lazily waiting for you to burn her, and she'll just be waiting there happily. But when we think about the temperatures, she's greening up, she's getting nice and taller when the fall armyworms show up, okay? Am I saying native grasses, native tall grass prairie, are resistant to fall armyworms? Bad news, no. Native stands got taken out last year due to fall armyworm pressure. There is no silver bullet for a grass option. It's just more thinking about cutting date, height. What is our fertility management over time? When did the fall armyworm show up? What was the level of pressure and how many feedings or generations did we get? Were we lucky and we got one hit? Or were we unlucky and got three hits, right? And then what our forage type and the age, kind of talking of cool season brome versus our nasty, nasty tall fescue. I know, but tall fescue stands, are they hit? Yes. Are they hit hard? Sometimes. I can't tell you why or why not. I bring up age. I have seen the mix of 30-year-old stands versus a stand, and the stands have been put in the last 5 to 10 years. Damage levels on both of them are bad. Who bounces back a better? I can't tell you, because I don't know who's bouncing back better. They both have limitations in their bounce back. When it comes to cool season brome, and I keep bringing up brome because I know she makes up a lot of our pastures and our hay meadows for a tame or an introduced. Think about the last 2 weeks of weather we've all experienced, right? Last Monday it was 10 degrees in Manhattan. By Saturday, I'm out there trying to do my yard work and it's 90 plus degrees out. We're hitting it again today, right? Cool season grasses do not like yo-yo temperatures. And that's what we're doing. We're doing this roller coaster, right? We can't control the weather. If we could control the weather, we'd all be billionaires, right? Instead, we're all farming and playing what feels like the lottery. So just keeping in mind what factors we can control versus what we cannot control and what those grasses are able to handle over time. Speaking of that, kind of thinking about that cutting height, the more we cut of that above ground growth, and this is not just for one season, this is continuously over time, we reduce our root biomass below ground. Because if we're taking away more and more from the top, it's actually having to pull out more and more from the roots to try to push to then bring sugars back, convert them back to carbohydrates to rebuild kind of what they tore apart, right? It's like trying to tear your walls off your house to try to rebuild your roof, and then when you don't need your roof, you're gonna tear those walls and put them back as walls. So it's just a never-ending cycle of we're always missing some kind of piece. Do I have the right answer of what your cutting height should be? My K-State material that is older than me, I know I'm a youngin', but it's still older than me, suggests leaving 4 to 6 inches of stubble height. I have seen fields that have been cut at 2 inches. I know your equipment, that might be how it was sold to you or what you've been running it for X amount of years. All I'm asking is maybe consider lifting it. Leave a little bit of forage behind to see if we can let that stand recover. We think about nutrients. Here's our healthy root system. Healthy root system. And then we kind of start to see some what looks a little sickly. And that's as we reduce one of our nutrients. And this is the main three nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. This isn't even getting into should I be applying sulfur, blah, 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 right? If we're shorting one of them, whether in a fertility mix or over time that soil can't provide, we're going to probably have some root structural issues. And just remembering, when it comes to any of our forages in a baling situation, right, we are removing per ton of forage, so 25 small bales, 4 to 5 big round bales per ton, We're removing 12 pounds of phosphorus and 40 to 60 pounds of potassium. Yes, we have soils in Kansas that are naturally high in potassium. We are mining the heck out of them. I understand potassium and potash and DAP are expensive, especially right now. I'm not telling you to go put gobs and gobs of it on now, but please take a soil sample and see where we're at. pH is a player in this game too. Forages can handle lower pHs, but they cannot handle them as we head into the fives because our nutrients get locked up. And it takes a lot of energy for them to change. Plants can change pH directly around their roots. They do it through an exudate. Basically, they push out ions so they can change right around their roots. But the energy sink, right? You have to use a lot of energy to do that. So probably the bad news outside of everything else I have said is bad news. We are outside of what I would comfortably suggest you planting a cool season right now. A cool season perennial. Really a cool season annual either. Please don't go plant oats right now. It's warm and we don't have rain in the forecast. I'd be very nervous about doing it. When it comes to whether it is smooth brome or tall fescue, you can see by these numbers, this is a pretty large investment we've got just in seed. So for here in Riley County, we're zone 2, zone 3. We are outside the recommended planting. It was March 15th. I know I planted my plots outside of main campus on March 17th. Please don't follow what I did because I don't know if my grass is going to come up. It is dry. It is dry. It is dry. Okay. We can replant in the fall. We do see these August to September periods. If you're in zone 4 way down south, which I don't think we are, you have a longer period. But I do preface, if we plant in the fall, we can still have fall armyworms. Okay? We're still in the time of fall armyworms. And if that young forage pops up and we haven't been controlling, we as in your field, your neighbor's fields, collectively haven't been controlling those fall armyworms, they'll wipe out seedlings. And that's what we've seen a lot of when it came to wheat last year. We were getting phone calls of wheat and cover crops being wiped out by fall armyworms due to the pressure of them. What about native forages? We are in the zone 2, so we are in the acceptable range of March 1st through May 15th. The optimum range would be April 1st through April 20th for native tall grass prairie establishment. I say the next piece is someone who's not against it, okay? If you want to convert to it, that's fine. I'm not going to be against you for doing that. Just remember, you're not going to get the production level off of native grass that you would have a cool season tame, okay? They are two different systems. They act differently. That native prairie grass is going to take 3 to 5 years to really establish, okay? And 3 to 5 is being generous in some fields, in some years, because I can't control the weather, whether it's heat, coolness, or water, right? So you have to be in the long haul and be prepared for that native forage stand to look, quote, pretty rough for a bit, because you also have to keep the weeds off of it. If you're not a subscriber to the Agronomy e-update, it is free. I know some of us in the room might not want some kind of free email getting sent to us, but this is how I keep the ag agents in the know and then individuals in the know of when fall armyworms are here. Because we publish, it's a weekly newsletter, right? We publish in that, we ring the bell very loudly when fall armyworms arrive to try to give you as much heads up as we can to get you into the fields. Because once we know they're here, we know they're here until we get frost. If you are working, maybe you are going to know you or you know someone who plants wheat. Here's my fun caveat of a phone. I know this isn't the wheat territories, but wheat can be used to help establish a perennial cool season. If someone tries to sell you a seed insecticide, it will not cover you against fall armyworms. They would have to eat that entire field before they ever feel it. An insecticide on the seed is to protect against below ground insects, like grubs. Fall armyworms are not below ground, okay? Watch your numbers and then spray. Do I have a preventative fall armyworm product? No, they do not exist. Do I have a product that is going to give you season-long protection? No. Any of those products on that list, no matter the price range, the most protection they're going to give you is 21 days. And 21 days is the, you applied it perfectly, you had exactly the right coverage water, you had the perfect weather, and the insect acted perfectly well. 21 days is our max. Realistically, 14 days is our max. For somehow, I heard some people applying insecticide last year. I wish they wouldn't have even applied because it was applied so poorly. Be careful applying them with a drone, okay? For one thing, a lot of drone companies will not spray an insecticide because insecticides are the product line that can actually affect you and me the worst. Because, fun fact, we are more related to bugs than we are plants. So an insecticide that hurts insects could hurt us, right? So there's drone sprayers typically, they try to stay away from insecticides. Also think about a drone and their spray volume. They're spraying 2 gallons per acre. That's very low carrier volume. I want you to be spraying an insecticide at 15 to 20 gallons per acre carrier, okay? Why? Let's think about, yes, it's itty bitty brown. It's brown, I know, but there's still some thick material you have to penetrate through with the liquid, right? So greater spray volume, you have more opportunities to push it into that thick forage, even if that forage seems like it's dying, to make sure we hit those insects, right? Because we might have found those really big, fat, nasty ones, but there's also probably those really small, skinny, little baby ones we really want to hit. Do I have a product that is going to keep the eggs from hatching? For one, we can't find the eggs, right? They're itty bitty and their Lord knows where they're at. We don't have a product that's going to keep them from hatching. Do I have a forage that is armyworm resistant? No. Is someone going to develop that? Nothing against y'all, but probably not even in my lifetime. Okay? Because forages have been on the back burner. The only forages that have been being improved has been alfalfa. Of course it is. Look at the price of that seed. Some tall fescue has been improved, but not a whole lot of it. But brome has not changed in 40 plus years. Brome is brome. Our seed price is going to get better for tall fescue, for brome, for go down the grass list. We have been seeing a decrease in seed production for the past 10 years. So I wish I could say seed prices were going to get better. Where is our main seed production being done? Missouri and Arkansas. And they keep getting hit, maybe not often with fall armyworms, but they're realizing they're getting hit quite often with fall armyworms, but it's precipitation. They haven't been getting the seed production that they wanted. A lot of other seed production comes out of the deep Northwest, so Oregon and Washington, and they haven't been able to produce as much seed as they need, and they are also tend to be more of a turf area anyway. We're not growing fun football fields. So I just bring all that to say, I wish I had better news of, we're gonna get rid of this insect. I think we're gonna have to be in for the long haul because of just weather changes. I'm not gonna say the C word, but weather pattern changes, the way that fall armyworms have changed. I didn't touch on that. Fall armyworms, by the way, have changed. Not only does BT not really affect them, we think about dogs, right? And there's different breeds of dogs. Fall armyworms now fall into two different diet groups. We have the one we refer to as the corn strain. They like corn. They like sorghum. They like those broadleaf grasses. And then now the scientists have found out we have what's referred to as the rice strain of fall army worms. If we haven't seen what a rice plant looks like, it's a thin, bladed, shorter grass. What do we think we're probably getting more and more of in Kansas? We think it's the rice strain. Can you go look into your field and say, I have a handful of nasty fall army worms and I know exactly which one it is? No, they look exactly the same. It's a DNA sequence situation that no one's going to do. Just kind of know that there are some dietary differences now. I asked the entomologists, can I do a feeding trial? As in not feeding fall army worms to someone, because that's gross, but no, can I feed the fall army worms different forages to see what they prefer? Which one makes them lethargic? Which one do they just refuse to eat? And the entomologist told me I was insane. So as much as I want to do something like that, I cannot. I have talked a lot. Here's my information. Here's one of my cute goats from back home. Do we have any questions, comments, anything that you have seen and you're like, tell me why it's like this and I will do my best? Everyone wake back up. I have silenced everyone. Surely someone has some kind of question.
I have a small area that I wanted to, that it's not been fertilized and it's been taken, hay has been taken year after year. So the field's getting pretty bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
I did some soil samples, K-State analyzed them, mm-hmm. and gave me a report of what it needed. But I don't want to do all that investment if it's just going to get destroyed. You know, with, I mean, I want to plant some smooth brome,
mm-hmm.
And K-State has a version of it, but it's not particularly licensed like OSU is or something. I don't know what the deal is with seeds, but I wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the timing is. You've already planted.
Hey, I don't know if it's going to come up.
Yeah.
So for now, we are outside of brome planting at this point. I don't go put anything in the ground. It's not going to be worth your diesel. It's definitely not worth that seed cost.
Okay.
Wait till this fall and hope, pray, do something, right, that we get timely moisture this fall, mm-hmm. for when we plant it, we can get it up. Okay. Can I tell you that's the silver bullet for getting it up? No, because there could be a whole lot of things.
What about fertilization? When should I put the fertilizer on, now or prior to?
Depends on what you needed. So did it need lime? Does it need phosphorus? Does it need potassium? That's something we don't have to discuss as a big group, right?
Yeah,
we can talk about that separately.
And I couldn't say I thought.
Exactly, right. So if it needed lime, so change pH, I would say get lime on it now. Why? Because lime takes 6 to 12 months to work, to truly work. Phosphorus and potassium, some people don't like to apply them early because we're going to, quote, lose them. Phosphorus and potassium bind to soil particles. So as long as we don't lose soil particles, AKA we need to put some kind of cover out there, right? Phosphorus and potassium hang around. The nutrient that does not hang around is nitrogen and sulfur. We apply them, we are not banking them most years, okay? Those are the expensive, all of them are expensive, I understand. So right now, I would not plant brome. We're out the window. Let's kind of think towards getting ready for the fall. Can I guarantee you're not gonna get hit by fall army worms? No, I can't tell you when they're gonna show up other than as soon as they do show up, we're gonna start ringing the bell, right? Do I think we're gonna be as bad as last year? I don't know. They don't tell us what's going on down in Texas. Texas doesn't report anything at this point because to them, they're like, we have fall army worms no matter what. We're not going to tell. We're not going to tell you. It's just, they don't have the manpower either, right? Do we wait for reports out of Oklahoma? I wish I could say that Oklahoma gave us timely reports. They don't. We do have case, when I say we, I mean K-State. Our entomologists in Southwest Kansas in Garden City has set up a trapping network. When I say trapping network, we are not pulling them into the state, okay? We don't attract the fall army worm moths. We do have a trapping network, at least we can use to see how high our counts are getting and if we kind of see dips and spikes in populations. Last year we had traps where we were getting 800 mobs per week. So very high numbers, right? And to kind of think about how these traps work, here is our trap, okay? I'm a female moth, okay? I'm flying. I'm not close enough, so I'm not gonna be attracted to it. But if I'm close enough to it, then I fly into it and I die, okay? They are not pulling them into the state. They're not pulling them into your field. I bring this up because we have a lot of people who think we're bringing them into the state. But we put a trap down in southeast Kansas in Cherokee County, the corner, right? The field that we put the trap in never got Fall Army War mobs. The fields to either side got eaten alive. So just because we have a trap does not mean the number is always accurate, clearly, and we're not pulling them into the state. I just like to use my little demonstration of we are not attracting them into the state, okay? I don't want this problem either. The Fall Army War slightly ruined my vacation last year because I had to be in Rhode Island the first week and a half of August. My phone never stopped ringing about, I think I have Fall Army Worms, what should I do? And I'm like, please go spray. My field is brown, what should I do? Please go spray. Well, if my field's brown, they're not gonna come back. Oh no, they're gonna come back. They don't care, they'll come back. Can I tell you spraying numerous times over a brown field's gonna make it come back? No. But I've also seen the fields who've never been hit with a single insecticide, they're gone. They looked green from the road because I went and looked at them. As soon as you stepped into the field, you realized it was nothing but henbit. It's now gonna be purple 3 weeks ahead of time. But does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, well, in the case of the fertilizer with nitrogen, do you do that way ahead of planting the brom or at the same time?
You can do nitrogen with planting 3 to 7 days beforehand. Okay. Or you could actually wait for the brom to get up and then fertilize it.
Okay. That helps.
Yep. You're just like, well, here we are.
Why do they not like to be? Well, I mean, like, we used to put oats in our turnips and radishes.
Mm-hmm.
Several years in a row, they ate all the oats out of turnips and radishes.
Right.
The last 2 years, we had turnips and radishes. They ate the wrong amount of water. We ate the wrong amount of turnips and radishes.
So we have to think for a moment, what is a turnip and what is a radish? They're part of the mustard family. They already have something naturally that the fall armyworm, for some reason, doesn't like. Do fall armyworms really affect soybeans? No. That's why when I was getting phone calls of, I have fall armyworms in my soybeans, I'm like, no, you have podworms. You have other problems. Fall armyworms, can I say they only eat grass? No, because they'll eat the hound out of some alfalfa. And then, I mean, strip. Alfalfa's gone, right? They eat every trifoliate and they're gone. But do they eat clover? Not that I can find in a cited study, which not everything has to be a cited study, I know. But I also haven't heard from folk tell me all my clover is gone, right? They tell me their brome is gone, their fescue is gone, everything else is gone. And then some clover has been hit, but I haven't seen it wiped out like alfalfa can be. Why are they selective? Entomologists can't give me an answer. Again, that's why I kind of joked I wanted to do a feeding trial and they thought I was insane. Why not let me make them try to eat something? I want to see why they don't eat your mustards, like, you know, the turnips. I have seen fall armyworms eating and not enjoying life at all on pigweed. Me and entomologists have joked that we just need to engineer fall armyworms to eat pigweed. That's never going to happen, but we can make the joke about it, right? So back to your question, what do they eat? Yes, they're going to prefer any of those simpler leaf product grasses. That's what they're aiming for. They're probably going to leave mustards alone because they smell funny. They're a legume, so they're related to alfalfa. I haven't heard anyone tell me yes or no. I have heard a lot of people in the southeast, deep southeast, tell me they're planting cowpeas this year to get some kind of forage in. I'll find out sooner or later if their cowpeas get eaten alive, right? Am I telling you that is your option? I don't want to stand up here and tell you anything is protected against it, because for the longest time, entomologists said, no, they're not eating the grass. They're eating the grass. The grass is gone, right? So I would...
They did eat around our red clover. We have a lot of red clover.
Yeah.
They left the red clover.
So it could be a potential, right? I asked the entomologist, what do the moths see, right? Bug eyes are weird. Are they seeing something reflectively different? That's why they choose. Entomologist couldn't give me a good answer, so I am just going to think as if I'm a bug. Maybe they have some kind of infrared or something that signals to them off where to go land. Maybe it's just situational. They hit a tree or hit something and they fall. I don't know. We're trying to figure that out. Bugs are hard because they aren't as cute as livestock, so no one wants to study bugs. They're not cute and cuddly, and there's not a whole lot of funding for entomologists either, unless they're destroying soybean and corn, the top crops in other states.
How are the corn growers in Texas protecting the corn?
As far as there hasn't been anything they told us. I'd say told us. They're not directly telling me anything, right? I just kind of I hear from the entomologist. As far as I'm aware, they don't spray for them, and that might be driving why they're having dietary differences, right? Maybe they're just hanging out in the corn because they're hanging out in the corn and they're eating it and been just blowing up populations. Maybe they're just taking it as a grain of salt and they say, yeah, it's going to cause some damage, but we're just going to move on with life. Because in other parts of the U.S., let's think about the Southeast, kind of where I'm from, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia get fall armyworms year-round in their forages. They never spray. Because I asked their forage specialist, what do you guys do about these? They go, oh, we never spray. And I was like, okay, then how? And I'm like, I know we still have grass back home. I know I'm going to say the dirty word, tall fescue. I know cattle people hate it. Horse people hate tall fescue. We're going to think about tall fescue for a moment because tall fescue grows really well in the South because it can handle whatever weather we throw at it back home. And by us, I mean the hurricanes, right? Tall fescue has an endophyte in it. That's what causes cows to kind of have bad body conditions. It's what causes horses to have foaling issues. So if the endophyte is doing that to an 1,100-pound cow, what is the endophyte doing to a tiny little caterpillar? Am I telling you that's exactly what's happening? This is, again, where I want to do my feeding trial. They will eat tall fescue. They do. Do I think that maybe slows them down? Potentially. I can't get an entomologist to give me a yes or a no because they're not forage people. But I do know in the deep South, they have fescue and they don't have their fescue eaten out. Does Missouri have lots of brome? Yes. Has our entomologist started to recognize that it's a problem with the fall armyworm? Yes. I don't think this is the world's newest issue. I think it's just becoming more and more apparent when stands are they're gone, right? Do I see solutions coming down the road? I don't know. Right, I don't see us coming out with the best forage in the world, the best insecticide in the world, because let's be honest, bugs prove us wrong all the time that they can overcome it. I think we're going to have to think about our management practices. And that's also a hard conversation to have, right? Mixing, maybe some kind of mix like yours is what works. I've heard that from other people. I don't have that data to back up that claim. Well, I've heard of the clover. I've heard of the clover grass mixes.
Clover, radishes, and turnips, I didn't say.
So just kind of thinking about, are we just growing forage because we need to grow forage to feed something, or is it a cover, or rethinking about forages is what I'm trying to get from, right? I don't want us to move away from our perennial systems because there's tons of benefits in a perennial system. Whether it's a cool season introduced or it's a native tall grass prairie. I don't want to see us changing over to a pretty continuous annual system because of what that could just mean. I don't want to call it soil health, but let's just talk about soil conservation, right? We don't want to lose our soils. Perennial systems protect our soils the best. So I'm hoping in time, myself and Molly Reckenborn, the new range specialist, we are trying to do this project together to try to better understand of those factors that determine a stand bounce back. We're working on a project. It's not a small plot trial that a lot of researchers tend to do. We're more going to a field, right? I'm going to use your example for a minute. We go to your field. We take a soil sample. We give you your soil report. We've paid for it, but here's your soil report. We're in your field. We're looking around what's around your field. Do you have tree lines? Are you surrounded by cropland? Are you surrounded by other past forage fields? Or are you surrounded by residential? We're trying to figure out what is it situationally, right? What's driving this? Is there a slope in the field? Is there a waterway near or in the field? We're trying to look at those pieces of information. We're trying to figure out what does fertility have to do with this, right? We know a lot of people are applying nitrogen year after year after year, and I'm glad because I've also gotten the phone calls of I don't apply nothing, right? Nitrogen is acidifying over time, any nitrogen product. So what are we doing to our pH? Is there a pH threshold to helping with recovery? Is there a cutting time that, yes, may be year dependent for fall armyworms, that we have a better chance of recovery or less, more recovery or less recovery? And does cutting time and then fall armyworm arrival, what's the correlation between them? We're trying to use the weather stations to try to say, okay, we had reports of fall armyworms these days, right? If we look back at the K-State Mesonet, where was the wind blowing from, right? What were the temperatures? Can we maybe start correlating to maybe a storm front? There's a lot of information, right? We're trying to boil it down to whatever we can figure it out to be without this just being we don't know, right? There's just a lot of information. We don't know which piece of the puzzle we need to be focusing on, because I've gotten the very much the word of mouth situational, right? Of I did this, this happened, and this happened. Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for that data point. We're going to put it into this, right? Because what you do on your farm is going to be different from your farm, different from y'all's, and different from yours, and different from something I would do. But which pieces make the most sense, and which ones can we affect, right? I can't change the weather. Again, if we could, things would be different. If we can't change wind patterns, but if we find there's a correlation between X wind speed from X direction and fall armyworms show up X days later, suddenly we have a better preparatory system, right? Compared to just sounding the alarm because a trap had moths in it. Or we got to call that they went to cut their field and they found nothing but fall armyworms all over their swathers. Those are some of the most disgusting videos I've gotten, right? It's just a swather and this all over, it's just fall armyworms and they're trying to save their alfalfa. And I said, I don't know if that saved it, but we can try. Because those numbers can get high very quickly. Again, think about 1,000 eggs per moth. Numbers get high. Yes?
So you show the picture with all the different sizes of them. If I go in and I spray once now and it's not going to kill the ones that are over an inch or whatever, do you recommend just spraying the one time and killing the littles and hoping the others leave, or do we need to come in another time?
I don't want to do this as a calendar method, right? Because just because you sprayed once, I cannot guarantee yes or no you need to spray again. I need you in that field looking at that field. I cannot have you just spray the perimeter of the field because maybe that would be cheaper. Again, fall armyworm moths can fly directly into the middle of it and nothing was saved, right? So I try to say situational, thinking about what residual you would have in that field, right? You've sprayed once, maybe you're coming up on that 14th day, that 2-week period, go into your field and look, right? Maybe they haven't come back. Maybe they haven't hatched yet. And I know it takes a lot of man hours to check your fields, right? But I also can't just say, well, you're not going to get hit. You've been hit once already. No, there's been fields that, hey, I'm pretty sure I almost got 4 times last year. Because the length of the fall last year, right? We didn't get frost for a while. And just because you're controlling your population doesn't mean your 3 neighbors are, right? And that's what was really happening in South Central Kansas in wheat. None of their name, no one was controlling fall armyworms because they said that's a forage person's problem. Well, then the wheat got eaten out pretty severely. And we had to, they replanted a number of fields last year because they got eaten pretty harshly. They will eat out volunteer wheat. Please do not take fall armyworms as a biological control for wheat streak mosaic, though. Cannot make that connection. Any other questions? Yes.
I'll have it posted online, and I can send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's give Tina a round of applause for coming out. I know King will probably be around this afternoon. If you have more questions, feel free to stop and chat with us. The last coffee pot meeting is going to be April 22nd. Molly's going to be coming. That's our new forage ring specialist, as well as Dr. Casey Olson. And we're going to be talking about invasive grasses, specifically Serecia lacetidiosa and Old World bluestem. Dr. Olson has been doing some research on some late summer burning. It's pretty interesting, so feel free to come back and join us. But thank you guys for coming.